It's Friday, and that means another edition of the Zeigler Report, real and unscripted, as always. The United State of Our Democracy is the subtitle. And once again, I'm John. I'm here with my son and business partner, Jeremy, the managing partner of John Zogby Strategies. And how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm good. I'm very good.
What are we talking about?
Well, I'm going to tell you what we're talking about. I know what I'm talking about. We'll see. We'll see how we sync. So I want to talk about today and want to project into the future as well. And I want to talk about Joe Biden. And my question will be, once I get to say what I want to say, is, was this the week politically that Joe Biden and the Democrats began to turn things around? What about the prospects for November of 2022? And frankly, what about the prospects of Joe Biden, both in the short term and then the posterity part is, let's start to project on how he may be viewed by historians. So that's a lot we're going to try to cover in about 20 minutes. But here's why I chose this topic, because I think by any standards, the president had a good week this week. Obviously, in comparison to a whole lot of previous weeks that weren't good. But if we strip away ideology and moral judgments about right and wrong, and was it the best thing to do or the worst thing to do, this was a week of accomplishments. Let me tick them off. The Al-Qaeda leader, Ayman al-Zawahiri, killed by a drone strike. It looks now, with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema on board, that a strong element of the president's Build Back Better initiative, stripped down, of course, but will pass the Senate over the next few days. Thirdly, the fire pits bill protecting veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who have been suffering from toxic fumes, from fires burning waste while they were deployed, has passed. In Kansas, voters in a very conservative state not only struck down an attempt to change the state constitution on abortion, but also had a huge turnout for an August of an off year and a primary. Nonetheless, there was as great a turnout in Kansas and a huge victory as a result of that turnout, as high as a presidential turnout. Just within the hour, beyond any expectations, 528,000 new jobs were created. Last month, the unemployment rate went down to 3.5%. Jobless claims are ticking up, but at least insofar as a number of sectors of the economy were concerned, the new jobs were created at a fast pace. And the administration diplomatically did a kind of a very interesting kabuki dance with China. Initially, very bothered, probably still very bothered by the speaker's trip to Taiwan in the face of our one China policy. But on the other hand, instead of attacking a U.S. official, not quite embracing her, but they didn't make as huge a deal out of it and let her take her trip. None of us, I think, are comfortable with the aftermath of the trip, but at least it did show some restraint on the part of the White House. And lastly, on a negative side, Brittany Griner and 9 years in what will amount to be more than likely a labor camp, unless she is freed, which I believe she will be at some point fairly soon. But with all of that said, I think all in all a very good week, an atypical week for any president, a lot accomplished. So in the short run and in final analysis, we're starting to see some polls, maybe not so much about Biden, although, you know, he's got a 44% job approval rating by Rasmussen. Ours tracks with Rasmussen. We had him at 45%. Also that the generic House ballot indicates that the Democrats and Republicans are tied right now. One poll by Emerson actually has the Democrats leading in the congressional generic substantially. So, turnaround week, good week, a week for the record books, or just a lot about nothing? What do you think? Are those the right questions?
Well, listening to you, I'm thinking that it sounds like the title for this podcast is The President and His Press. That kind of is a wordplay on JFK's often forgotten speech, The President and the Press, which he gave at the Waldorf Astoria in 1961, totally on a totally different topic, but just the name, that The President and His Press. His Press will give the picture that it was a good week. And maybe some of those things may be okay. And I'm not going to go touch on all of them because that would take too long. But you mentioned the fire pit bill and killing the leader, Zawahiri, the leader of Al-Qaeda. To me, that just says to me the legacy of the war on terror, which has been an abysmal chapter in American history, like a lot of those other wars that we've engaged in, the war on poverty, the war on crime, more on that to come. This happened with, you know, George W. Bush, when the numbers were getting very low and the public were getting impatient. You know, there was that great press gathering of him flying from the airplane onto the ship, mission accomplished. And no, mission wasn't accomplished. It wasn't even close to being over with. Then, of course, when Obama's numbers were getting low, the Al-Qaeda leader, bin Laden, was killed. And, well, you know, maybe that jolted things for a week or two, but I don't think in Obama's, Britannica, Encyclopedia Britannica entry, maybe that'll be a footnote. So I see it more or less. I mean, people can say, well, he did a great thing. I would say he probably recruited 100 new terrorists by doing that. That's probably going to be an advantage for Al-Qaeda in being able to martyr that person. And so the fact is that there's this horrible legacy of the war on terror, and we shouldn't even be there. We shouldn't even be talking about it. We shouldn't even be there. And the fact that the fire pit bill, that here we have all of these soldiers coming back who have PTSD, have lost limbs, whose lives are never going to be the same, who went on to fight a war for the empire, and a lot of them are disillusioned, and a lot of them, and I've spoke to some of them, and they've told me, I went in, I thought I was fighting for freedom, but I found out that it was wrong. And then the thing that they were turned off the most about was the treatment towards veterans. And so this is the legacy of the war on terror, and Biden should treat the war on terror like a hot potato. Get it the heck off my hands, get it off my desk, and quite frankly, it should be over with. Another thing that the Democrats are going to pat themselves on the back about is the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which is really just key words for brace yourself, folks. Inflation's about to get a lot worse, because when these bills come out and their names are given that they're going to help and they're going to do good, they actually do the opposite. Let me just give a few examples. Affordable health care. It wasn't more affordable. In fact, it got more expensive. I know Democrats and liberals will say, but you had to do something. There were 20, 30 million people who weren't health insured. That's a whole other debate. The thing is, was that it was sold as affordable. And one of the key writers of the legislation even cracked a joke about it, that they sold in on the, quote unquote, the ignorance of the public. And so that was, you know, an example. Also, the war on poverty created more poverty. The war on terror created more terrorism. The war on crime created more crime. And so history shows that if these names are any indicator of the future, the Inflation Reduction Act is going to make inflation worse. And brace yourself for it. Watch it happen over the next few weeks. China, I mean, provoking China and sending Nancy Pelosi over to Taiwan.
She was invited and she went. And the White House did not want her to go.
And she shouldn't have even gone. And I'm skeptical about the fact that the White House is always provoking China. And they were under Trump, and now they have been under Biden. So maybe there's a good cop, bad cop thing going on. But the fact of the matter is, why, you know, we're barely escaping World War III with Russia over Ukraine, and now we're about to provoke further another world power in their own backyard. And I've said this, and I've said it many times. Just imagine Russia sending their highest diplomat to Canada, or China, or the Chinese premier going to Canada to talk about a new relationship, a new naval base, a new military base. Could you imagine what would be the response? We tend to forget that because maybe the DC class are so used to considering themselves as the center of power, which they are militarily, but they tend to lose their empathy and understanding that rising powers want a multilateral world and don't want a world in which a single empire, which is in its decay, clear, and it doesn't have to be in its decay, is trying to dictate to the rest of the world. And so regarding the future of Biden, and, you know, I've read a little bit about Roman history. I would say JFK was Claudius, the emperor who came after Tiberius. Tiberius was, he was a good administrator. He was following Augustus, who, you know, was basically a god. Uh-huh. But Tiberius had some serious issues and corrupt, but was a great administrator. Claudius was an intellectual who wasn't even supposed to be emperor. Actually, he followed Caligula.
Caligula
was murdered because he was absolutely insane. But JFK probably was Claudius, that almost like one of those last hopes of the emperor, of the Roman Empire. But everything after that really devolved into Nero-type leaders. And I think Biden and Trump and Obama and George W. Bush are going to find themselves in that class of the decadence of the American empire, which signals its political decay. But it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't have to be that way.
Okay, we have plenty to talk about here.
Yeah.
All right, so we each stated our piece, and we always do, and I appreciate that. But let's strip ourselves from our obvious ideologies, okay? You know where I stand. I think they do, too. They know where you stand.
I'm a little more difficult to define, but sure.
All right. but I think I got it. In any event, let's take a look at how Biden will be viewed in history. Now, let's do it on the basis of accomplishment and not on the basis of moral philosophy. So, for example, George Washington ruthlessly put down the Whiskey Rebellion, which was a legitimate rebellion, but he's the either the first or the second greatest president ever, according to historians, because of what he did and how he did it. Abraham Lincoln, the greatest. In some instances, few instances, second greatest, suspended civil liberties, ruthlessly fought a civil war against fellow Americans. Franklin Roosevelt in third, Teddy Roosevelt in fourth, controversial presidents. In fact, the least controversial probably of the top four was Franklin Roosevelt. He has his opposition, to be sure, but even conservatives loved most of what he had accomplished domestically and in winning World War II. All of that said, on the flip side, what goes on in the present sometimes is reevaluated in the future. Initially, the reviews on Harry Truman were negative. He left, you know, with a 23% approval rating, always in the top 10 great American presidents. In my lifetime as well, Truman is in my lifetime, but Eisenhower. I remember Eisenhower 20th when we only had 39 presidents. And today, Eisenhower is ranked 5th for a lot of notable accomplishments, not the least of which is the interstate highway system and civil rights, ironically. Good reviews for Bill Clinton, despite moral character. Good reviews for Barack Obama. Accomplishment. What are they? Preventing or preventing a major depression, recovery of the economy, the Affordable Care Act, the recognition of gay marriage, and so on. These were some significant accomplishments, for good or for evil, by Joe Biden this week. How do you think history is going to view him? Going to view him, do you think he will end up as a pitiful sort, ranked somewhere in the lower third? Do you think he'll be rated just in the harmless middle? Or do you think that he will be viewed by some significant accomplishments and among the top, let's say, 20%?
Yeah.
We're speculating here.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that, well, you know, it really depends, because at the end of the day, there's different houses of history.
Yep.
And
they tend liberal.
You know, I maybe it's liberal. I think it's beyond liberal. I think it's, they tend establishment, centralizing, federalizing, enlarging the scope and action of government. The ones that you named have all done that. Although George Washington did do that, he followed by and large Alexander Hamilton's program, which, you know, the Anti-Federalist Party said, why are we creating a mercantilist system that we effectively fought a revolution to overthrow? Which Hamilton was the agent for a mercantilist system. So you have this whole strain of thought that goes in the line of that anti-federalist, which I don't tie that to. Some people will say, well, that's plantation slavery. Well, so was George Washington, you know. And don't forget the Northerners owned slaves too. And the only reason that the Southerners had slaves is because it was viable for their economy and it wasn't for the North. So I don't like to get into that. What I like to get into is there were two visions, competing visions. One was centralizing. Mm-hmm. One was saying that we needed a centralized government with more power away from the states and to the federal government. And the other ones were saying somewhere maybe a balance or more to the state. But it, whether it was, you know, Lincoln or FDR or Truman or even Obama, they all went in that class. So if you're judging by who's going to be in the greatest historians, you're going to see a basic division where there are those, the establishment historians, that are going to favor that narrative. But who are the historians that you know, say that those people aren't good because they created a trend of centralizing more power? So, I mean, Biden clearly is in that line of thought, where we're getting to a point in the near future where we're going to ask ourselves, well, what isn't in the scope of the federal government? What isn't up to the federal government? Whether it's for, you know, emergency or acting in the goodness of the public or the public will, which some of the founding fathers were very skeptical of what is the public will. Jefferson, for example, was very critical of the notion of what is the public will. That was the language of Rousseau. And Rousseau essentially breathed life into the Jacobins. So, you know, it depends where you come from. I'm not, when if you say or if someone says I'm coming from a moral standpoint, it's not a moral standpoint of Judeo-Christian Islamic. I guess you could say it's a moral standpoint of power. And in a self-governing democratic republic, power is something to really be questioned. So that's what I would say. And I think Biden clearly, not irks, is in that line of presidencies that are bringing us away from that tradition and really more towards an authoritarian, a creeping authoritarian regime. I do use that word purposely, but it's been going on. I'll say one more thing. That's the trend of the imperial presidency. So that's where I'm coming from.
That's where you're coming from. Okay. So I'm going to back up and remember both Hamilton and Jefferson were using as their premise which position and which policies are more likely to ensure the victory of the revolution. Is it staying true to the notion of that government that governs least governs best and protecting the rights of the states and the individual, or is it building a structure that can defend against enemies, that can ensure the common welfare, that can pay its taxes, can win respect overseas, can oversee trade and protect American trade? Both sides were legitimate, and both sides were the dominant forces in our history, American history, for the first 100 years or so. So with that said, I want to move away from that, and I simply want to talk about numerical accomplishments. James Knox Polk, for many years, was in the top 10 of U.S. presidents. Why? Because he stated 4 goals in one term, and he achieved all those goals. Now, what were those goals? Empire. You know, he doubled the size of the United States. He massacred Mexicans. He maneuvered, manipulated, lied, cheated the United States into a war, but he set goals and he accomplished those goals and died, incidentally, as a young man shortly after he left the presidency. Now, Polk is not viewed as someone who had great accomplishments. He's viewed more from the lens of the negative side. Flip side to that, Jimmy Carter left the presidency almost in disgrace and now is viewed in the middle of the pack because of some genuine accomplishments, not the least of which the Camp David Accords. Let's just put that hat on for a second. For good or for evil, is Joe Biden someone who, at least from the vantage point of this week, running up to this week, someone who has accomplished a significant amount, or someone who just deserves to be placed on the garbage heap of the also-ran presidents?
A total failure. And you know I'm not Republican. You know I'm not Democratic. You know in my 20s I was a progressive. You know I flirted with conservatism and libertarianism and have read classical liberalism and know fascism and know what communism and socialism are. And I am looking at this as objectively as I possibly can. He is a failure of a president. The promise that was brought to day one of from the media, the adults are in the room. No, these aren't adults in the room. these are far, far, far from adults in the room, to the we're going to build bridges, and no sooner even the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, as early as January, started to show that they were cracking with the establishment. And the notion that, and it was, to me, it was just media talking points, that there was going to be a healing of any sort. And of course, I know you could say, well, Trump and the Republicans made that impossible, but the Democrats didn't really make any overtures, and nor did the president. He had an agenda, and the agenda was to really be make the Democrats, who once were the party of the people, the party of Davos. And while many Democrats are okay with that, saying, well, yes, we do want to follow the party of the Davos, we do want to build back better, we do want to be more in accordance with the UN and things like that, there are a segment of Democrats who are clearly dissatisfied with that, hence why there's a 38% approval rating, which we know a lot is coming from the Republicans. We know some of it's coming from the independents, but some of it's even coming from the Democrats, because the Democrats are losing Hispanics, they're losing ground with African Americans, they're losing grounds with the youth. And those core people were who made up the party of the people, that brand that the Democrats were, and they are out of touch with reality. And Biden embodies that, totally out of touch with what people are saying. You know, the other day, I think it was the San Francisco Board of Governor, of all people, from the Board of Governor from the Federal Reserve, said, I'm not feeling the effects of inflation. Well, of course you're not. Mm. You benefit from inflation. So this is kind of like that, you know, and I talked about it last week, that signal of let them eat cake. The elites are in the ruling class and the establishment are totally out of reality, out of touch with reality. And Biden embodies that, and his party, by and large, embodies that. But yet watch for those key groups who are abandoning ship. And so when you see the voters and the public opinion starting to go against him, you have to say, how is he doing so great?
Okay, my last comment is that given this week, if this momentum can continue, first and foremost, November of 2022 has just gotten a whole lot more interesting and a whole lot more competitive. In the longer term, even if there is only one term, and I don't know what's going to happen or not happen, but even if there is only one term, barring anything else unforeseen, and there's always unforeseen, but Joe Biden could very well find himself in the top 12, 13 presidents in American history on the basis of genuine accomplishments. What that bodes for the remainder of his presidency, I don't know, but there is a record here in the first 18 months that is a pretty significant record. So now a programming note. You will be in Europe next week, and so we're not going to do the podcast. And then 2 weeks from now, you will be, hopefully you'll be coming back, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so next week, I'm going to be at an undisclosed location in the Balkans. Mm-hmm. And so on vacation. And I'm going to take next week off. We'll take next week off because I want to let it soak in. The Balkans is a very important region throughout world history. And I really want to take in the culture, the landscape, the people, and their perception of what's going on. And then my last Friday there, I would like to do the show from there. You'll be in the Adirondacks, mm-hmm. and I think we'll be refreshed with a different perspective. So how does that work?
That works. Okay, have a good week. Have a good couple of weeks.
You have a great trip.
Thank you. Bye-bye.